Welcome again to another episode. Today we have a special guest. She's been here before. She is an Ewe Hebraic historian, and her name is Seram Ajanku. Seram, you're welcome once again to this podcast.
Thank you. It's always my pleasure.
Yes, and for this one, we found an interesting topic. So in Ghana is and parts of West Africa, but she'll go deeply into it. There is a traditional cloth called a kente, and we want to discuss that topic on the kente. How did it come about? What is the significance of the kente cloth to Africans as a whole? So without any more time, I would like Sarah to come to add.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me. Like I said, it's always my pleasure. There is so much confusion and mystery about this cloth that is popularly known as the Kente cloth. The cloth has gained so much international recognition, and I would say partly due to the efforts of the Asante Kingdom and who have very efficiently marketed it as an Asante cloth. They would refer to it as an Asante cloth. The Kente cloth is Asante, is what you hear. And the story that is out there in the online spaces and the academic spaces as well is the fable that the Asantes associate with that cloth, which is that they say there were two hunters who were out in the forest, and they encountered a spider weaving its web. And from there, they were able to learn how to weave from the spider. And that is the genesis of what is known as the Kente cloth. Well, there is a problem with that because, as we well know, spiders don't weave kente, spiders weave web. So there is a lot of confusion about the true history of the cloth. And so we are going to delve into that. That's what we're all here for today. So this cloth is very popular throughout West Africa. We have to realize that there are weaving traditions all throughout Sub-Saharan Africa. Contrary to what the popular belief, the Sub-Saharan Africans were not just running around naked when the colonizers arrived and the slavers came. In fact, they were very much clothed, and they were intentionally made naked and put before being put on the ships. That was another form of dehumanizing the people they were tr the invaders were going to traffic, in addition to branding them and all kinds of various heinous things that they did as well. So I started off by mentioning the Asante Kente. Now, there is an Asante cloth. The original Asante cloth looks something like what you see in the background here. And this cloth is actually a mourning cloth. It was traditionally used by the royals for funerals, for mourning. And the story behind this cloth was that it was actually taken as war booty when the Asantes fought with one of the kings in the Cote d'Ivoire area. And this cloth was taken as war booty and eventually started to be made by Asante artisans and became also an Asante cloth. And it's a mourning cloth. And the various designs in it stand for various things. I would say that this is a form of communication because they're saying there's so much they're saying through this type of cloth. So this is the original Asante cloth. Now, the oldest preserved textiles that was found in West Africa was actually found in Burkina Faso. There's an archaeological site over there that is called Kissi. The town is called Kissi. And these are some of the samples of what was found, and they were part of grave goods. They were used for at a burial site. Okay. Yeah, so these are some of those samples of the cloth, and these were actually made of wool, and they date back to like the 4th and 6th century after Christ. And we know that the Ghana Empire was also known as also being called Ouagadougou. There's a heavy connection to the Ghana Empire, being that the Ewe people, upon their arrival into West Africa, that was their earliest known domicile before the Ewe people migrated further south, following the Niger River into what is Nigeria, Benin, Togo, Ghana, and Ivory Coast, and so forth. And there are even still some linguistic connections that we can easily pick out when it comes to Ghana Empire. Already, Ouagadougou in Ewedema means town, country, nation, right? And the overlord or the ruler of the Ghana Empire had the title of Kayamaga, and Maga or Amega in Ewedema means a leader or a ruler. Right. But in the Soninke language, it is actually the king of gold. And the Ghana Empire was known for its trade in gold and salt and those kinds of things as well. Now, also on a spirituality level, there was the titular deity of the Soninke back in the 6th century and thereabouts was called Bida. And that was actually called, that was known as, that was a serpent. It was a serpent deity. And we know in Ewedema that means serpent. So there are those strong linguistic connections that we have with that narrative, as well as the oral traditions corroborating it. Now, the royal family of the Soninke, who was headed by the first Kayamaga, was also said to have come from the east, come from the northeast. And it was discovered that it was relayed that they had come in from Yemen. That's where they had migrated from, which also coincides with the Ewe oral tradition of emanating from the northeast, sojourning in Egypt and Abyssinia, which is known as today's Ethiopia and Sudan, southern Sudan today, before coming further west. So we have that connection. So, and I say that because the Ghana Empire encompassed what is now also Burkina Faso. You understand. So the significance of the earliest excavated cloth being found in what is today's Burkina Faso is that our earliest determination of the relationship of Ewe people and weaving goes all the way back to those times, which is like the 4th century, 6th century, thereabouts. All right, let's see. Let's move on here. So weaving, we obviously took that weaving skill and knowledge all the way down into the rest of West Africa, into Nigeria, into Benin, into Togo, and into Ghana, and even Ivory Coast. In Ivory Coast, they have the Baoulé have a traditional cloth, and it's made of raffia. It's not made of cotton traditionally. Now they make it of cotton. So we evidently brought the weaving traditions in with us, especially the fact that the weaving is male duty. Traditionally, the women do not weave on the loom. The loom is for men to weave on. The type of weaving that women do, it's by hand. That's the type of weaving that the women do, that is without a loom. But the loom weaving is reserved for men. It is the tradition is passed down from father to son within the family lineages. And we can see here a picture of a gentleman weaver and his apprentice. Usually the apprentice can be his own son, or can also be sons of relatives that would come and stay with the weaver, the master weaver, purposely for to learn the skill of weaving. And this picture was taken in Everland, which was named Togo. It was taken by a German. They called all of Everland from eastern Ghana all the way into western Togo. They called that Togo because we called it Togo, right? Which means beyond the river. All right. So the earliest designs of ever cloth, they are always in stripes. The square and different types of these types of designs came later. Okay. So the square designs came later. The different, just like the one in my cloth, those came later. The initial ones were always in stripes, and the colors depended on what message you wanted to communicate, and also depended on the availability of certain dyes. So in the 1800s, 1800s, there was an abundance of indigo. So you'll find that cloths that from that time period were predominantly in indigo. Okay, or indigo and white. So this town, Alada, is significant because Alada, being in present-day Benin, was sandwiched between Dahomey and what is called Ouidah, also Judah in on Portuguese maps. Now, Alada was an ever kingdom. It was well known for its highly developed textile industry before it was conquered by King Agaja of Dahomey in 1724. So all these places, Alada and Ouidah, which is also known as Ouidah and also known as Judah, these were all ever kingdoms. And these, the founding fathers of these ever kingdoms, including the kingdom of Dahomey, were Aja ever people. These were Aja people, and the base was from Alada. And the story goes that there were three brothers who split from the Alada kingdom. One went to found what is called Dahomey, and another went to found what is called Ouidah, and then the other remained in Alada. So Alada was known for its textile industry. So the ever weavers of Alada specialized in the cotton cloth, and that is what we are calling kente today. In Evegbe, kente or kete, that simply means open and pressed tightly. That is just a description of the weaving process. So that is what the name informs. The cloth was a major export. It was a major export commodity from the slave coast, which is all of Everland, which is from eastern Ghana to southwestern Nigeria. So all that space that included Togo and Benin, all that space was known as Everland, and that was also known as the Kingdom of Judah, but it was also known as the Slave Coast. That's what the Portuguese dubbed it as well. And so initially, before they started trading in human cargo, the Portuguese actually were purchasing cloth, this Ebedu, the Kente cloth from the Kingdom of Alada, and going over, taking them on their ships, navigating all the way onto Elmina, which is in present day Ghana, and selling the cloths over there in the Gold Coast. So that was one of the commodities that they traded at that time period. All right. So in his book titled The Slave Coast of West Africa, 1517-1750, Impact of Atlantic Slave Trade on an African Society. This is from Oxford Studies in African Affairs. The professor Robin Law writes, cotton textiles even became a major export from the Slave Coast, being bought by European traders for resale on the Gold Coast of West Africa. The earliest reference to this export of cloth is an account of Portuguese trade in Alada in 1620. This is a time that there was no such thing as Asante Kingdom. Do you understand? Because the Asante Kingdom came about in 1701. That is when they defected from Denshira and fought against Denshira and won their independence. they created that confederacy and called it Asante to commemorate the reason they had come together. They had come together to strengthen themselves through war to be able to free themselves from their overlords, who were the Dinchira. You understand? So the name Asante means because of war. Okay, and so that came about in 17. But here we are talking about the cloth in 1620. So we're talking 17th century and 18th century difference. Okay, so two cotton gowns said to have belonged to the King of Alada were included in a collection of curiosities assembled by a merchant of Ulm in Germany in the 1650s. This is when they assembled it. All right. So that is the key takeaway from this part, which is that long before, I mentioned in the beginning that the cloth is known worldwide as an Asante cloth because of how it has been marketed. So, however, long before there was a creation of an Asante kingdom, the Eves were already weaving this cloth and selling it to Europeans, and who were then in turn acting as middlemen and selling it on the Gold Coast. So this is one of the tunics. This is one of the samples that were taken. This tunic dates back to the 1620s, and it belonged to a king of Alada at that time period. Okay. I had a replica made of the cloth itself, just the design. Do you see the stripes, the blue and white?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is my replica that I had made just to look exactly like the one belonging to the King of Alada in 1620. And so, like I've mentioned, the original cloths, the original Kente cloths, were just had stripes. They did not have the squares or any other fancy designs. They just had stripes, just like this one. Okay.
So are the design unisex?
So some of them are, but there are some that are also reserved for women. There are some that are reserved for men. There are some that are reserved for women. There are cloths that are designed for different, various purposes because of what they would communicate. Now, as you know, I am an Ever-Hebraic historian. It wouldn't be complete. This expose wouldn't be complete without showing you the Hebraic connection. Now, somebody might say, well, the Evers are trying to, or Seiram is trying to be like the Jews. That is not true. The actual fact is that the Eves have a long tradition of being descendants of the original biblical Israelites and not related to the Jewish religious organization, which has formed a nation and has a nation today in the Middle East. Okay, so no relation there. However, there were 12 sons. There were 12 sons of Jacob, who you know as Jacob. In Ebegbe would be Yakobe. And these offsprings of these sons scattered all throughout the world. We have to understand that before these scriptures were made into a religious tool, they were first historical documents that also contained cultural practices and the spirituality of a people. There have been archaeological finds that relate to them. The Meneshta Stele mentions the Israelites. So it's not a mythical people. This is an actual people who did exist, and their offsprings are actually still existing today. So on the cultural aspect of it, there is a connection between the cloth and the coat of many colors of the biblical character who is known as Joseph. All right. So we know that Alada was an Ewe kingdom on the former slave coast of West Africa. Now, I also shared that Alada was well known for its production of cotton textile, notably the Kente cloth, which is now called the Kente cloth. We also call it Ebedu. We also call it Agbamevo. We also call it Kete. Okay. Alada can be traced to a grandson of Judah being a son of Jacob. And this grandson of Judah was called Lada. In modern Hebrew pronunciation, that's how it is, the name is called. The name is pronounced. So according to the biblical historical account, Lada or Alada was the father of the families who made fine cloth. And this can be found in 1 Chronicles chapter 4, verse 21. It says, the sons of Shelah, the son of Judah, were Er, the father of Lecah, and Lada, the father of Mareshah, and the families of the house of them that rough fine linen. When they say linen, they're just talking about cloth. It's not necessarily the linen material. It's just talking about people who made cloth. And of the house of Ashbia. Now, Ashbia is also a significant name because Ashbia can be found in Ebeland, and it is properly pronounced Ashigbe. Ashigbe is also a house in Ebeland that is well known for weaving. They're master weavers, the Ashigbe people. So in the same family, we see Ashigbe, we see Lada. Now, Ashigbe can be found in Agbozume and Keta in Ebeland. And they still weave till today. They continue the tradition because, as I mentioned, the tradition is passed down from father to son. All right. So in Genesis 36 and 37, we are also told that ancestor, whom you know as Jacob, we would say Jacob, gave his second to last born, Yasefu, whom you know as Joseph, a cloak of many colors, which he had woven, right? That is what it says. Now, we need to consider these writings as historical accounts, not just spirit. There is nothing spiritual about this, the story of Joseph right now. In this context, it's just telling you that he wove the cloth. This is not a spiritual account. This is a historical writing, okay? So he made the cloth, he wove it himself for his second to last born. Just a minute. Okay. We also learned that Joseph's brothers became enraged and conspired to eliminate him, right? So because of the cloth and other things, if the cloth that their father had given to Joseph had been any other cloth, it would have been a non-issue. But because this Hebrew cloth of many colors was none other than the kente cloth, or also known as kete or vedu, right? Then Jacob's kind gesture was a little more than just a kind gesture, wouldn't you say? Yeah. So the colors in the cloth have significance. So the blue represents purity and holiness. The green cloth symbolizes lush and bountiful agriculture. The multicolored cloth embodies all of the attributes of the various colors. So this type of cloth is reserved for royalty, leadership, you know, because we're saying that this person embodies all of these attributes. So Joseph was essentially crowned by his father as leader over his elder brothers. So this would have meant war. This is what the brothers would have been fighting against, which is that already Joseph was having dreams that he was going to be their leader. And on top of that, their father validates his dreams and by giving him this significant cloth of many colors. It would have been various colors of stripes in the cloth. All right. So that is the documented historical evidence, okay, of the biblical connection. And then we also saw in the 1600s, 17th century, the cloth being bought by Europeans on the slave coast, which is Ebeland, and sold on the Gold Coast there for, you know, in trade of various things, so gold and other things as well. And the house of Judah that specializes in the cloth is still alive today. You have notably the name Achigbe, which is still very much present in Agbozume and Keta, and also in various areas within Ebe Land. So this is the tunic. I believe the second picture is the back of that same tunic, the reverse side. Now the cloth has evolved, because I mentioned that the original cloth did not start like this. They were not the square type designs. They were always stripes, right? So there was an evolution of the cloth. The cloth was heavily influenced by the Indian cloth. There is a cloth that is called Indian cloth, also known as Guinea cloth. It was so you can see there's a swatch of it in the background picture. And it has also blue and white stripes, but it also has some square designs on it as well. So now they've introduced lines, stripes that are going vertically instead of just horizontally, or horizontally instead of just vertically. So now you have the introduction of squares. Now, this type of cloth, the Indian cloth or the Guinea cloth, was introduced once again by the Portuguese, and also very, very heavily marketed by the Danes. Around the 18th century, the Danes really took it up and heavily marketed it and made it, and it was cheap to buy. So this cloth almost broke the Kente cloth industry. Okay, the Indian cloth, they were importing it from India into not just West Africa, but all throughout sub-Saharan Africa, and even on the East Coast in Kenya, in the southern part, and Central Africa. It was pretty much everywhere. So because people then preferred this cloth that was coming in, the imported cloth, the Indian cloth, it kind of affected the Kente weaving industry because people were favoring this. So what did the master weavers do? They quickly learned how to incorporate the squares into the cloth in order to be relevant and in order to compete with this Indian cloth that was being introduced. So that's when you start seeing the types of squares. Here's a prime example with the late Togbe Dagadu III. This is a picture of him. He was the overlord king of Pando. Pando was a very wide, large area of Ebe Land. And there's so much history behind this king, but that's another topic. But here he is wearing, in a toga style, the square designs of the Kente cloth. So these are the introductions of square into the weaving process. And here are some more. This one dates to the late 18th, some more squares. And here you have some more squares. So you have the stripes, you have horizontal blue and white stripes being interrupted by yellow, gold, brown, red, vertical stripes. Okay, this cloth also dates back to 1910, 1930s. Here you have another type, and this one on the left is zoomed in, and we have it on the right zoomed in. And you can see the intricacy of the art of weaving. It was really master weavers, and they would spend a lot of time on these. They to weave a whole cloth for, let's say, a man, a male wearer of the cloth, it could take them like 3 months to weave the cloth because it was so meticulous, and they produced such quality cloths that when the Europeans came to find it, they started putting them in their museums. They took them as treasures and donated, gifted them to their kings and other royal members. And these are museum quality cloths. These are always found in the Ebe Land. The museum quality cloths you do not find so much in the Asante areas. So the museum quality cloths are always Ebe cloths. And as you dig into it, you'll find that the oldest Kente cloths are always Ebe cloth. So when I initially mentioned Asante and their association with the cloth, it is to redirect the history so that we realize the truth of the history, so that we acknowledge that the cloth is actually an indigenous Ebe cloth. It's very important that we safeguard things that are indigenous to us, because that is what makes us makes us diverse. That is what makes us so unique as a country in Ghana, where we have so many ethnic groups and they all have so much to offer. But we need to be able to know the truth of these things, and we need to learn our true history. Otherwise, these things get lost. When other people claim that this, they're the originators of this or they're the originators of that, it actually does a disservice to us and also to the memory of whatever they're claiming. Because when they claim those things, they cannot back it with evidence. They cannot show us the receipts. They cannot show us the oldest cloths, the oldest samples that they have. But the Eves have the oldest Kente cloths. And so we can prove it all day long. And we need our generations to come to know that this is their heritage, and have interest in learning how to weave and produce such quality cloths. All right. So this is another sample. The cloth is on the right, and here is it is zoomed in. We can see the introduction of some figures, right? So these are intricate designs by master weavers in Ebeland. And again, you can see the stripes, multicolored stripes, horizontal stripes, now interrupted with colorful vertical stripes. This is also influenced by the Indian cloth. Here are some squares as well, and more stripes interrupted by vertical or horizontal. These are the ones that you see nowadays as well. Now, some of the oldest cloths also had fringes on them. Okay, so we had that as well. Here are some beautiful pieces. Here you see they've introduced even a serpent in there. And that might be this person, the wearer, might be into farming. That is probably why they have the green as the background. They might be a leader in their community. That is why they would have the multicolors. And they might also be of the serpent deity cult as well. That might be the type of spirituality that they practice. Here are some more samples of squares. Beautiful cloths. These are museum quality cloths. These are Ebe cloths. Okay, so here is a great example of the multicolored, simply horizontal stripes cloth. And here's another one. Now, these are the types of cloths you see now nowadays. These are the more modern cloths, and the brightness of the colors is because they've introduced silk into the cloth, into the weaving. Whereas in times past, the master weavers only used to weave with cotton, right? As they came into West Africa, being that it's a hot climate, wool is not really something that they use so much of anymore. So they have to adapt to what is locally grown or what is locally available, which is cotton. So the previous cloths that I showed you, they were all made of cotton. Now, these modern cloths are made of silk and cotton, or rayon as well. So that's where you get the vibrant colors. And this is very interesting. This is an exquisite Kente inspired art by L. Anatri, which is also, he's an Ewe sculpturist. Very beautiful. He made it to look like the Kente cloth. And that is the end of my presentation today. I hope you learned something about the Kente cloth. The key takeaways is that the Kente cloth is indigenous and indigenously an Ewe cloth. It has been known worldwide to be a cloth of royalty. And of course, as I mentioned, the Asantes have claimed it as their own, but the historical evidence points to the Ewe as the indigenous originators of the cloth. And the cloth has a historical connection to the biblical Jacob and Joseph, which is the cloak or coat of many colors that Joseph made for one of his sons, who is also known as Joseph. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you. Thank you again for the in-depth explanation and information about the Kente cloth. The Kente cloth is very vibrant and hand-woven fabric with the rich cultural significance. So I thank you for yet giving us another rundown of the work that you do. Thank you so much.